The old man stood facing west. Although lunchtime traffic was heavy and loud, his voice had dropped nearly to a whisper. I leaned closer. "Sometimes I wish they'd never built that road," he said. "Everything has changed." A single tear slid down his face. "Most of what I loved is gone," he told me. W. Stanley Hansen, Jr. was helping me with an article, telling me about his father, one of the Tamiami trailblazers, whose trip persuaded the world and potential investors that a highway across the Everglades was possible. The Seminoles, of course, had been navigating it for generations, but city folks didn't take to the idea of poled canoes, hence the trail hoopla, a front-page PR effort that convinced advertising magnate and swampland developer Baron Collier, yes, the county's named after him, to foot the road-building bill. Much loved by the tribe, Mr. Hansen's father, the white medicine man, was the one who persuaded two Seminoles to guide the group across the glades. Toward the end of his life, Mr. Hansen, who died in 2005, had maybe begun to wish they hadn't. Taming a wild thing is never easy. It's a shock, an imposition of will. Throw a rope around a bronc's neck, and before the beast will serve, there's a fight. As long as that lasso doesn't break, though, the horse is yours. It was that way with the Everglades. The Tamiami Trail was the rope. Before the trail, most European settlers viewed the Everglades with fear and revulsion. Then, dredges, dynamite, pickaxe-wielding platoons of laborers muscled a 5-foot-tall safe zone across it, and the Tamiami Trail became a 2-hour, 1-bathroom stop drive from Naples to Miami, though the swampland still seethed and flowed on either side. Then came Alligator Alley, the southernmost stretch of Interstate 75, but this time planners sealed the wild behind chain link. On the trail, though, wild things are on their own, wandering its sun-warmed stretches at their peril. I've never seen a felled panther, but I have winced past flattened foxes, huge shattered soft-shelled turtles, and a host of otters, armadillos, water moccasins, and hawks, all bested by vehicles. Yet you can still ease off the shell shoulder, stretch, and stroll to a roadside canal where gar glide in the limestone shade. Alligators bask and yawn on grassy slopes, and countless herons stalk the shallows. And some roadside entrepreneurs are hanging on. Airboat rides, gator farms, umbrella-shaded old-timers selling boiled peanuts and coke. The Miccosukees still have about 300 acres along the trail, and some families let the curious into their compound for a few bucks. When I asked then-Miccosukee spokesman Stephen Tiger about the adaptations his tribe had made over the years, he said catering to tourists was not part of the original plan, but he was pragmatic. "People realize that children are going to have to be educated," he told me. "You want a car? You have to get a job to get the money." A few miles down the trail, you could pay a few dollars to wander around the Osceola family's 5 acres. Beyond the cash register and the postcards, past the gator claw back scratchers, soft-spoken matriarch Frances Osceola was sewing a patchwork dress in her chickie. Oprah laughed down from her TV. I remember asking her if the steady stream of strangers with their constant questions bothered her. She looked up from her work, gaze sweeping over me, across the fabric-covered tables, and up the chickie's cypress beans to the palmetto ceiling above. "Well," she told me slowly, "they put a roof over their heads." "And," she said, looking with a sly grin at a chattering group of sandal and Hawaiian shirt-sporting tourists, "you can't beat the scenery."